Idea.
Introduction.
This first chapter is about how to get ideas for a startup. Solve your own problems. The most important thing is to find ideas from solving your own problems. You do that by looking at your own life and observing what your daily challenges are. Then you see if you could make those challenges easier using technology. If you solve your own problem, it's very realistic that there's many more people like you who would also love their problem solved. And that's pretty much what a business is, solving lots of people's problems in return for money. In startups, this business can be in the form of an application, a website, or even only just a physical service tied together with some technology. Your problem might just be everyone else's. My most successful project is Nomad List. It's a platform for remote workers and travelers to find places to go to and meet other people when they're there. When I built the first version of Nomad List, I was traveling through Asia. I was living in Chiang Mai, Bangkok, and Bali. I knew these places were good for digital nomads, but I didn't know what other cities to visit. I'd go to Singapore and discover it was nice, but also very expensive. I'd go to Vietnam and realize, wow, it's really cheap here, but the internet is unusably slow. I was looking for cities that were cheap to live, had fast internet, and warm temperatures. I thought, okay, maybe just make a list of cities with that data. It was just a private spreadsheet first. I added about 25 cities' temperature, internet speed, and cost of living. Then I wanted to share it. I tweeted the URL. But something was off. When I looked back, someone had hacked my spreadsheet. There were now about 75 cities. And it wasn't just temperature, internet speed, and cost of living. There was safety, best co-working space, and climate added as columns. Instead of sharing it as read-only, I had accidentally clicked editable by everyone. Suddenly, there were hundreds of people adding data about their cities and the cities they'd been to. After a month, thousands of people had added data about over 250 cities. This is a good example because I just wanted to solve my own problem. And it turned out it was thousands of other people's problem too. Your own problems are nice because often they're quite niche level, meaning you'll have enough other people with the same problem to be your user, but not enough that some giant company has already done it. You are the greatest expert at your own problems. Even if it's not always successful, the concept of solving your own problems is a great way to find ideas that might be viable. A lot of people don't do this. When you try to solve problems that aren't even yours, like somebody else's, you can do that, but you are not an expert in the problem area. For example, I could make a healthcare app which registers patients and their health situation, which diseases and ailments they have, and where they are in the hospital system. But I'm not a doctor. I've only been to a hospital when I was sick. I have zero expertise on healthcare. I don't know the problems doctors have. I can look at the entire industry from an outside perspective and think, okay, we need to solve this problem. There's a lot of money and opportunity here, but I still don't know anything about it. I'm just not an expert in the problem space. And until I become a doctor, I probably will never be. You want to find ideas from your own problems because you'll be an expert on them immediately. How well do you need to know a problem to solve it? Somebody asked me, how well do I need to know a problem to make something for it? How much can I learn along the way? I think you need to know a lot about the problem you're trying to solve. Once you have traction and your website, app, or startup works, you can learn from user feedback and data you collect then. But that's useful once you're already running. It won't help you find ideas that are suitable for you to execute. First-hand experience with the problem you're solving is best. And not just at the start. When your company grows and you stop becoming the target audience, you face a big risk of not understanding the customer anymore. A good example is in hip-hop. A rapper comes from a low-income ghetto, gets success rapping about that world, then gets rich from the success, loses the inspiration of that world, since he/she now lives in a giant mansion and their career is over. Personally, I saw this happen with myself. For a while, I took a break from traveling as a digital nomad and the product suffered. Now that I'm back on the road, I see where my site sucks. For example, it doesn't work well when I visited smaller towns where there's hardly any nomad activity. So I lowered the membership price of Nomad List and started focusing on just getting more people in. as that's more important short term than making money. I wouldn't have realized this by staying home. Problems are always changing, as are markets, as are people. If you are your target market, that's perfect. You just evolve with it. The founder of Boosted Boards, an electric skateboard, said, "We just wanted to make skateboards for ourselves and there was no real good electric ones. We built it for ourselves. We knew exactly how we wanted it to feel when driving. We knew what people wanted because we were the target market." I'm starting to repeat myself, but that's because this is a repetitive theme with successful companies. And opposite, a repetitive theme with failing companies is founders who have no connection to, expertise on, or passion for their industry. Be more original, and your ideas will be original. There's an issue in itself with only solving your own problems. What if you're not as unique as you think? It takes only a slight glimpse at current startups' ideas to see that everyone is making the same stuff. Everybody's doing a to-do list app. Everybody's doing productivity apps. For a decade, people have been making apps to find your friends on a map. Everybody's doing some kind of photo sharing app. These are basic ideas that everyone has, and they're too obvious, and everybody's doing them because everybody has the same problems. So how can you find problems that are actually unique and original? Well, become more unique and original yourself. I would have never built Nomad List if I didn't go traveling and working. So you need to do stuff that makes you explicitly very different. It will get you more unique ideas. That's super cool, because now you have two great attributes of an idea. It's not just unique, but it's also something you're an expert at since you've done it yourself. Even if you launch and get competitors later, like I did, because they see you're making money and it's a good market, you'll still be in a better position than them because you're real. You've done it. You're an expert in the problem you're solving. I would be bad at making an app for doctors, but if I was a psychiatrist, I'd probably be able to make a very good app for psychiatrists, since I'd know all about it. Part of the lean startup approach dictates talk to customers to find problems. That's nice and all, but then you're still working from an outside perspective. I'd say, just focus on your own problems. Also, stop reading books to develop yourself or get ideas. You won't get them from there. Or if you do, there's lots of other people reading the same book probably. Get ideas from your life experience. Get outside. Become original. Do crazy stuff that you're scared of. Jump off cliffs. Do it safely. Ask people you like out, scary but nice. Walk into random office buildings. Jump fences, but don't storm the Capitol Hill, thanks. Crash hotel pools, whatever makes you different. Don't be scared, live. The downside of solving only your own problems. There's a strong and somewhat valid criticism on the philosophy of solving only your own problems. If you're a wealthy guy from a Western country, you're probably going to solve problems that make your already pretty good life better. You're not going to solve problems that women or people with other genders have because you don't experience their problems. You're also probably not going to a developing country and solve the problematic garbage situation there. It's the privilege argument. I get it. And I see the criticism there, but then it's hard for anyone to solve a problem outside the context of their own subculture, city, country, continent, region, income class, and gender, because they're not experts on it. And maybe that's not as bad as we think. If we can democratize access to computers and the internet, as we're doing now, people anywhere can focus on solving their own problems and reap the financial and other rewards from doing that. And isn't that much better than having a white guy do that and reap the rewards? Always start from the problem, not the solution. A lot of companies start not from the problem, but from the solution. This is one of the biggest mistakes you can make. Technology needs to solve a problem. If you make a solution for a problem that doesn't exist, it might look sexy technologically, but it won't get users. When new technology becomes available, people want to use it to build something. A great example is the endless amount of apps that have appeared since smartphones got GPS chips a decade ago. The first thought is, okay, let's use this to track each other. So you make a map with friends on it and where they are. This has been tried over and over, and it's still a pretty terrible idea. I don't have a strong curiosity to know where my friends are, and I don't necessarily want them to know where I am due to privacy. The problem doesn't exist. When I meet up with friends, We simply say a place we're meeting up and we can find each other. Now, a good example where this technology is used to solve a problem would be Tinder. It does use your GPS location to find people around you to date. That works because you don't want to match with people on the other side of the world. It solves a problem, and the solution is enabled by available technology. The problem should always be first, not the technology, not the solution. To get big, you have to start small. Niches are specific market segments that are shallow enough to easily access, with not many players in there. Niches are a great start because they're usually too small in economic value for big companies to attend to. They're also the perfect size to market a new company towards. Niches go against the ridiculous go big or go home attitude that the rise of startups in mainstream media pushed from 2006 onward. But that attitude isn't realistic because most big companies started very small. If you start big from day one, it's the wrong way to go about it. People don't like niches because they're too small for people's egos. But niches are much more profitable than you'd think. If you have just 1,000 people paying you $83.33, that's $1,000 in revenue in 1 year. How to make $1,000? Make a $5,000 product for 200 people. Make a $2,000 product for 500 people. Make a $1,000 product for 1,000 people. Make a $200 product for 5,000 people. Make a $100 product for 10,000 people. Make a $10 product for 100,000 people. How to make $1,000 with subscriptions. 500 people pay you $167 month for 1 year. 1,000 people pay you $83 month for 1 year. 2,000 people pay you $42 month for 1 year. 5,000 people pay you $17 month for 1 year. 10,000 people pay you 9 months for 1 year. Start with a micro niche. Let's say you want to make booking software for hairdressers. That could be a niche. But how many hairdressers are there? Probably millions worldwide. Why not go even more niche? Booking software for hairdressers that focus on African hair. Now you're talking tens of thousands, maybe? That's a good start. Let's say you captured only 10% of those 10,000 plus hairdressers that focus on African hair. That could be 1,000 customers paying that 83 month, making you a $1 million bootstrapped company. From micro niche to multi niche, if you're at a party and someone asks you what you do and you answer, you make booking software for African hairdressers, you might think it's too basic, i.e., you're not changing the world with this. But you shouldn't, because first of all, you're probably making good money off those 10,000 hairdressers paying $100. That's $1 million in revenue already. And if you validated your startup in that niche, you can expand to other niches. What about Asian hair? White people hair? Step by step, you move closer to the entire booking for hairdressers market. Why do it step by step? Because you can easily go smaller again if you fail and try to expand in another direction. It's like a lightning shock in slow motion. It tries to find the path of least resistance. Your company should be doing the same thing. From multi-niche to adjacent markets. Now let's say you have the entire booking for hairdressers market. What about booking for nail salons and tattoo shops? Now you're doing restaurants. Now what else do all the shops need? A point of service payment platform. Okay, you have all these shops as customers already, so you can easily sell this new service to them too. And best of all, test it on them first. You then scale up FRM multiple niches to adjacent markets. From adjacent markets to becoming a platform. With the experience from payments for physical shops, you move to virtual payments too. With lots of luck, you'll be one of the biggest payment gateways in the world. You'll go into e-commerce with virtual storefronts for the physical shops of your customers. You just became big by starting small. See what happened here? You became big by starting small. Most people do the opposite and crash and burn. They want to build that giant payment platform that will change everything. But hardly anybody started with that. Facebook was a hot or not app by Mark Zuckerberg. Apple was a personal computer build kit for amateur hackers. Microsoft was a tiny software agency that resold MS-DOS from another developer to IBM. Google was a small academic experiment to search Stanford University's local intranet. Get it? Stop. Thinking. Big. Think small first. You'll be big at the end. Your idea does not have to be earth-shattering. I don't think your idea should be earth-shattering. If you look at most big startups, their first idea was not earth-shattering at all, most of them. Think Uber. They started as an app where you can simply call a taxi, right? Then it grew into an entire transport solution. The long goal is self-driving cars that transport everything and to replace the entire transport and delivery industry. All that started with a taxi hailing app. Your first idea does not have to be, and probably should not be, earth-shattering. You start with something small. Don't think too big. Then slowly, you can get to the big part by extrapolating, scaling your idea to a bigger market, from a niche market, and to a bigger, more abstract idea. With Nomad List, I started with a list of cities with cost of living and internet speeds. Then I scaled that up to a social platform for digital nomads. Now the long-term goal is an entire internet platform for the future of remote work. That means more tools for nomads, remote workers, and businesses that embrace this future. That all started with a database of cities. That's not earth-shattering at all. The more I talk with people in the startup world, and they tell me, like, this idea is going to change the world. It's going to be a billion-dollar company. Those are usually the ones that fail really, really bad. The ones that go really well, and I know from seeing friends around me, are the ones that are people who are really modest, and they just say, ah, we just want to fix a small thing. Then, okay, we fix it. Okay, what's next? What are we going to do next? They do probably have a long-term vision, but focus on the small stuff every step of the way, because that's how you get big, by focusing on small steps. If you can't even do the small steps right, how are you going to get to the big part, right? Don't focus on the idea that is earth-shattering. Just start with something basic. Virtual reality is an industry that will be earth-shattering, but you don't have to have an idea that's earth-shattering. You can start with a basic little virtual reality game app, like I'm doing now, and slowly add functionality until maybe it becomes like the next virtual social reality world where we're going to live our lives in. You don't know what you're going to end up with. That's another point. You need constant feedback from your users in the markets to see what people want and what people use and whatnot. You can't just think of that. You can't think big immediately. You have to start small. Create a list of ideas and keep track of them. A good start if you're looking for ideas is to keep track of any you might get. How you keep track of your ideas is up to you. I now use Workflowy and previously used Trello for it. I have a few different lists. The first is for concepts, that's rough ideas. Then if one of the ideas looks good, I move it to the promising list. If I actually start executing them, I put them in the building list. Then if it's done, I have a success or failure list. When it's a failure, I usually also write inside the card why it failed in a postmortem that's one sentence long. The first list of basic ideas has zero limits in how weird or crazy the ideas can be. This is on purpose. There shouldn't be any judgment on your first basic creative premise. It can evolve into something more practical later. The thing with ideas is, at least with me, that they keep coming back in my brain. I'll get a basic hunch, then weeks later it comes back, and then months later it'll start to manifest in my mind. Then sometimes, even 2 years later, I'll finally start executing it. This is great because your mind is like a rice cooker for ideas. They need to get ready before you can put them out and build them. This list of ideas doesn't have to be physical or virtual. It can also just be in your mind, if that works for you. As long as you keep going back to ideas and see if they have evolved to become worthy of actual execution. Should you make ideas alone or in a group? I think collaborations can be very dangerous because if you work with somebody else in a team, there's a big tendency of groupthink, where everyone starts hyping each other on the value of the idea. The prototype might only get mild validation from paying users, but you're working with this group and you're already so crazy about it that it doesn't really matter what users pay Dudag say. That's very bad. It should only be about the users. I've been in these rooms. I've seen it happen. I'm telling you, Joe, we've got something really good here. No, we don't care. It should be only about customers. You see a lot of startups go wrong because they have this group think in the beginning, and it's actually not rational thinking. You're more rational on your own. Obviously, collaborations can work with idea generation too. But I think the most important part of idea generation is getting ideas yourself, then talking to people, customers, users, to evolve them. Not talking to your teammates how great your team's idea is. The worst is to be with people that just confirm what you already think. The best is to test your ideas as quickly as possible. Even asking other people for advice is kind of bullshit. You can't ask, will this idea work? You need to ask the market by building it. Nobody knows until you launch. Don't be afraid to share your ideas. The most elementary mistake people still make is not sharing their ideas. No, people won't steal your idea if they like it. And even if they do, they probably can't execute it as well as you. And even if they do, you're not a snowflake. There's thousands or even millions of people with the same ideas as you. Stop thinking you're so special. Ideas are a dime a dozen. Everything is about how you execute. Idea X, execution, business. Bad idea, yeah, 0. Good idea, yeah, 10. Great idea, 20. No execution, 0. Good execution, $100,000. Great execution, $1,000. To me, ideas are worth nothing unless executed. They are just a multiplier. Execution is worth millions. To make a business, you need to multiply the two. The most brilliant idea with no execution is worth $20. The most brilliant idea takes great execution to be worth $20,000. Derek Sivers, in his famous essay, "Ideas Are Just a Multiplier of Execution," 2005. You shouldn't be scared of sharing your idea because execution gives the idea its details and specifics. That means 10 people with the same idea will execute it in 10 completely different ways. The benefit of being able to share your ideas is that you'll be discussing them with everyone, potential customers, vendors, suppliers, whoever. Everyone will have some input on it, which you may or may not use as feedback. Again, the market remains the most important feedback, though. Not sharing your idea is stupid because it'll stay only in your head. You for sure won't be objective at judging it since you have something called optimism bias, which is the tendency of individuals to underestimate the likelihood they will experience adverse events, e.g. you think it'll definitely be very successful. It doesn't matter if people say that idea will never work because they're not the validation. The user paying using it is the validation, not other people judging your idea. The point of sharing your idea is thus not to get people loving it or hating it. The point is that you get your brain working outside of its comfort zone of talking to itself, and you'll evolve your idea. You'll come up with adaptations of your idea or entirely new ideas by talking about it. Conclusion. To get ideas, try to find problems in your daily life. You're the foremost expert at problems you have, more than anyone else who doesn't have them. If you keep coming up with the same ideas as everyone else, try to make yourself a more original person by actively experiencing different things. Don't shy away from taboos and fringe ideas. That just means you're ahead of the curve. They might become the next big thing. Don't think big. Start thinking small first, then take it one step at a time. You'll become big by starting small. To avoid groupthink and drama, work alone, especially early on. Share your ideas freely to get other people's input on them. Log every idea you have, filter them, and see which ones you can execute upon. Resources mentioned. Workflowy, Trello, Stripe, Zapier, Intercom, OLARC, Typeform, your homework. Spend the next 7 days making a list of problems you have in your daily life. They can be small or big. Try to find 3 ideas per day so that you have at least 21 at the end of this week.